Well, sticking with this notion of the Indigenous Summit, there is still a long way to go, but that historic meeting yesterday of the Prime Minister, the Opposition Leader and the Indigenous Leaders ended, despite what we heard from Noel Pearson there, I think generally in the room, a sense of optimism and a commitment to work together to find a path to constitutional recognition for Australia's First Peoples.
I think that there is an abundance of goodwill. I think we are good enough, big enough and brave enough to do this, but it is important that we get it right, and that's what today's process is all about.
That's Prime Minister Tony Abbott speaking at the end of yesterday's summit meeting with Indigenous leaders. Getting it right, though, is the challenge, and it's no easy task. So I guess we should be looking to other countries that have already achieved this kind of recognition for Indigenous peoples, among them New Zealand, some of the nations of Northern Europe, and also Northern America. Ravindra Da Costa is professor at York University in Canada. He specialises in global Indigenous settler relations, and he told James Carlton that Australia really does have some catching up to do.
I would say so, yes. New Zealand, at its formation, passed a treaty, the Treaty of Waitangi, which since the 70s has been significantly renovated to become part of the constitutional fabric of that country. Similarly, Canada has both long-standing treaty rights going back to the 17th century and also a constitutional suite of protections for Aboriginal peoples.
And in the Australian context, let's start with the area where there's widespread agreement, namely the need to remove the discriminatory race power that has existed in the Constitution since it was adopted in 1901. Explain what it is and what needs to be done to it.
Well, both the states and the Commonwealth in Australia have the power to pass legislation that affects specific racial groups. And this could be used for their benefit and in negative ways. And that seems an unusually framed power in the modern world.
Australia, as you're aware, in order for this constitutional change, whatever it may be, to come into effect, requires a majority of support nationwide from all voters, plus a majority of states. Can an amendment to the Constitution outlawing discrimination get up in that context?
The history of these things makes one not be optimistic, but it's the question of what people want in society. I mean, polls in Australia show very high levels of support for recognising Indigenous peoples. All Australian electors will have the opportunity to think carefully about what that means. Is there a point to recognising people if there's nothing that comes with that recognition that might improve their lives, that might allow, to put it pragmatically, a greater burden of those people's affairs to be determined themselves? You know, these are fundamental philosophical questions. I think the discussion about what Australians are capable of is it's really up to them.
What about the argument that Australia shouldn't put up a proposal which will get defeated because that'll set the process of reconciliation back?
It's a real possibility. It would be something that would be remarked on around the world, if that matters, that Australians have publicly turned away from equality. It would be very difficult to mount such a substantial change again for, well, a very long time.
Well, that seems to be an argument in favour of a minimalist position. That is, remove the racist race power, as Tony Abbott is proposing, put in a preamble which acknowledges the existence of Indigenous people, some reference to cultural heritage or some such.
Well, the tension here, I think, is, are you putting in place some kind of legal and political engine for change? The idea of recognising a substantial right in, for example, again, Canada, is that, yes, indeed, we can go and use that right to determine social affairs in present and future cases.
How does that happen at a practical level in Canada?
A native man in Northern Ontario gets apprehended for having wildlife that he shot, and he asserts an Indigenous right to hunt on his own traditional territory. And courts have, in multiple examples, have understood that those rights actually are Indigenous rights and have said provincial or state governments and the federal government should recognise in its administrative arrangements those rights. It's actually led to many kinds of new productive businesses and opportunities for cultural awareness of Indigenous culture. There's many, many Indigenous businesses where people are outfitters and guides and support recreational hunters and fishers. So these kinds of things are, I think, a testament to the social dynamism that plays out on the ground in complex societies. The tension I sense from afar is that this will cost Australians at large something. People shouldn't be alarmed about the desires and ambitions of Indigenous peoples. We really should see this as an opportunity to embrace the fact that Indigenous peoples are, for all their different histories, want many of the same things that everybody else does, which is health and education and prosperity, a desire to have a continuing robust identity, no matter what people like Andrew Bolt and others would have you believe, and an ongoing set of communities, real communities that exist and have histories and have, of course, futures. And this is an opportunity to recognize this distinctiveness has a future that is productive and autonomous.
And what about Noel Pearson's suggestion that what's more quickly achievable is an overarching, almost like a declaration of independence, a 300-word statement that can go into much more detail and have much more beauty than, say, a small constitutional amendment, and that that could be coupled with some form of Indigenous governance, a separate body to the Parliament?
Two things about that. What status would such a statement have? I just leave that question open. No such statements exist that I'm aware of that are meaningful instruments in the determination of public policy and law. So what would be achieved by that statement other than a moment of celebration, which is perhaps insignificant?
Yes, and then he says that statement would be coupled with a Indigenous representative body that could have some oversight.
Well, I mean, this is the recurring fantasy of Australian political parties since the 60s, late 60s, really, is the idea that each successive Liberal Labor government would come up with the right body that could be the perfect interlocutor between Indigenous peoples and the state. And I think the question for Indigenous people, largely, is could there be a national body? I mean, these are societies in which some of the systems perhaps you and I take for granted, like electoral democracy, aren't the right ways of determining accountability and representation. These kinds of imposed models really struggle for cultural and localized significance.
There is a suggestion in the Australian debate that we shouldn't go down the radical approach of altering our constitution with an explicit power outlawing discrimination against Indigenous people. Is that a radical position in the world context?
I think it's radical. The status quo is radical, James. It's more radical to live in a society that's like Australia, that the kind of society it isn't a society that needs to have its government able to discriminate against people on the grounds of race. Australians should take this opportunity to do something that is actually in international and global terms, among societies that are most like it, actually joining the mainstream.
That's Associate Professor Ravinder Da Costa from Canada's York University speaking with James Carlton.